and welcome to the OMFIF podcast. My name is David Marsh, chairman of OMFIF, and today I'm delighted to be joined by Wolfram Seidemann, the chief executive of D&D Currency Technology. Today we're going to talk about trust. This is a key factor when it comes to means of payment. In this case, we're going to be talking about digital currencies. At the beginning of February, OMFIF published the study Digital Currencies, A Question of Trust. This was a report on global public confidence in monetary, financial, and payments institutions around the world. Now, two terms are currently with us, and we have to think of these at all times, bracketing them together, trust and digitalization. So my first question to you, Wolfram, given the corona crisis that we're going through, we are experiencing a period of huge uncertainty because of this virus. We're all facing very difficult times, personally, commercially, economically. This is notable in everyday life. And it really has got implications on how we purchase and pay for goods. Do you, at this time of crisis, see an impact in people's trust in the current payment systems?
Well, thank you, David. We see people trust in cash. In times of crisis, especially, the need for cash is very high. And we see this pattern in today's crisis as well. Cash is a proven means of payment, and people tend to trust the familiar. On the other hand, we also are experiencing a boost in digitization in all areas of life. Many people are not allowed to leave their homes and shop online. You can't use cash here, but need to use a private scheme you need to pay for or you need to share your data with. Here, the digital offer of the central bank is missing.
Yes, I think this is becoming more and more topical. We notice everywhere people do tend to use more contactless means of payments. Now, going back to the report that we produced at the beginning of February, this has got quite large implications for central banks, many of them around the world, who are now considering this type of digital currency issuance. And this consideration may well be speeded up as a result of the crisis we're going through. Central banks, according to our report, do seem to be relatively well positioned to issue digital currencies. In almost all countries, according to our report, the people that we asked indicated that they would be feeling most confident with digital money issued by their domestic central banks, because there is a certain amount of trust in those central banks. However, when you look into the report, you see there's many caveats, many conditions, many areas where trust, even in the local central banks, can be improved. What do you think is the best way to apply the lessons that we bring out in our report, balancing all the different historical, cultural, and legal issues in all these different countries?
Yeah, well, people have trusted central banks to uphold stable economic and financial systems with the help of cash. This trust needs to be transferred in the digital world. As you mentioned, central banks are the most trusted institution when it comes to payment, and they certainly have the expertise to also offer a digital currency. In any case, a regulatory framework is needed, and an important factor also when it comes to trust is highly secure technology.
Yes, this question of how to link the benefits and the perceived characteristics of cash to digital currencies, that's really a leitmotif of our report, and indeed all the things we're going to be talking about today. Now, when you ask the respondents in our survey about what they think about digital money issued by a technology company or a credit card company, you basically see a relative lack of confidence in digital money, which would be issued in that way. And we see this particularly from respondents from the advanced countries like Germany, like the UK, like France. Why do you think this is?
Well, this could be due to a number of reasons. People in advanced economies have a very high awareness when it comes to data protection. The EU GDPR, which came into force in 2018, had an impact on everyday's area of life. At the same time, there were also large data leaks at some global internet companies. People are very sensitive when it comes to their data and especially their money. Another point could be that people are well aware that private companies are driven by business interests. The national currency should always be a public good, however, whether physical or digital, and should not be guided by profit.
I think that's a very important feature, Wolfram, when it comes to central banks, because after all, these are public monopolies. They are normally owned by the state, and they should be above board when it comes to issues of trust. Now, all these central banks, they've got enough to deal with when they're looking at the corona crisis, but they're grappling with issues connected with shortcomings in trust in their specific ability to launch, operate, and safeguard digital currencies. That might not be number one issue at the moment, but it's certainly going to be an issue when it comes to thinking about digital currencies in the near future. How should they best go about making sure that the trust they have generally is actually also there when it comes to the question of issuing digital currencies?
Ultimately, I believe open communication with the public is the best approach. After all, trust has a lot to do with credibility. In my opinion, central banks are the experts in secure payment solutions, and that includes digital currencies. Keep in mind that banknotes are high-tech products trusted by the entire world. Central bank must now transfer this trust to digital currencies. Digital cash could be based on an efficient technology that is compatible with regulatory framework, highly secure and fail-safe. If you want a CBDC to be widely accepted, people need to understand how it works and that it can be trusted.
Yeah, so basically cash is king. We've heard that there's been a big boost in online payments and contactless payments during the crisis. So the big question is, how indeed can we transfer these century-old benefits of cash, transferring them to the digital currency system in this new world that we may well be entering into? How would you do that, Wolfram?
Well, first of all, cash is in high demand because of its benefits. It's easy to use, secure, allows payments anonymously, everyone can use it, you can store it. So our guiding principle must be to transfer the characteristics of cash into the digital world. To do this, we need to define a common set of desired CBDC features. It needs to be pledged to the currency, it has to be a legal tender, it needs to be accepted everywhere, must be easy to be used, and it should be non-exclusive. No existing private digital means of payment fulfill all of these criteria today. And no off-the-shelf technology is available that can meet these requirements. So that's why we developed a new CBDC solution, which we call GNDphilia. GNDphilia is a CBDC ecosystem, allowing the central bank to issue digital currency via the banking system and allowing the user to pay person to person, online and offline. It's designed to enable everyone to pay everywhere. The new generation of digital currencies to complement the cash cycle.
Well, that does sound like quite a good idea, and I look forward to hearing more about that. Another element that comes up from time to time, is certainly featured in our report, and you all know about this, is that speed is an important factor when it comes to digital currencies. People tend to think that digital currencies are good because they can be implemented very fast and you get your money across, wire it across frontiers with a great deal of speed. However, according to our survey, it showed that when it comes to the general public, speed is the least important characteristic of payment systems. And so this suggests that digital money, it may be very quick, but it's really got to work hard to improve its safety features. That seems to be the most paramount important question. How can companies like GND, you've got a huge amount of experience in security technology, how can you tell the public that it may be quick, but it's going to be ultra secure and as secure as cash? How can you get that message across? How can you achieve that aim?
Well, it's essential to have a deep understanding of central banks' needs. And I think here it's worth to look into an analogy of the currency industry, how they work today. And we have been a trusted partner in this area for decades. For cash, we developed sophisticated and advanced security features. However, we are also experts in high secure digital infrastructure. Imagine then from tomorrow onwards, there would be the e-euro. This would become a sporting challenge for any hacker. Would be the top target to attack. Therefore, a robust and future-proof technology is needed for CBDCs. The GND anticipates future requirements. For example, when attack methods change due to easy access to quantum computers, the GND Group is a technology leader when it comes to security, from payment to connectivity, identities, and digital infrastructure. I'm convinced that GND is the right partner to develop a future-proof payment solution to extend people's trust in the digital age.
Well, that's again a very good point. I look forward to seeing that enacted and look forward to seeing some real examples of all that. Another question when you look at our report is that there's a great deal of difference in attitudes to digital money depending on income and education, age and nationality of the respondent. It's really interesting when you look at this, high income and young respondents express the most confidence in current and future digital money, and they consider speed to be relatively important. These results indicate that openness to digital offerings rises with income and education, but it declines with age. Older people are more cautious and tend to put more emphasis on safety. So central banks, the ones that you're talking to every day, do they need to make a particular effort of what I would call persuasion and promotion with certain categories of society, certain categories of age? And how can central banks overcome these gaps in society and make sure that they are targeting the right elements to get their message across?
Yeah, we can observe at all levels that young people adapt obviously more quickly to new situations, especially to new technologies. However, I think the entire population should be well informed about a new legal means of payment. So we have to address all groups. When new banknote series are issued, for example, accompanying communication measures are key. In the past, we have supported our customers with such measures, for example, with currency apps where the public could make themselves familiar with the new features of the node. Of course, we can also imagine the same when it comes to digital currencies. The population does not have to understand every technical detail. However, they must be convinced that it's safe to pay with it.
So communication, as in many areas, is absolutely paramount. Now, I also think another area of communication is sharing experiences. But what would you say is the role of learning processes? I mean by that what I would call cross-fertilization between the central banks on the one hand and the private sector on the other hand. So we can together help to draw up guidelines for regulators, central bankers, and the private sector who all wish to promote digital currencies in different jurisdictions around the world. How would you say such interactions should be best organized, and then the results of those interactions communicated, so we get the best possible outcome from these networks?
Yeah, I think the entire new economy is based on sharing and building networks. And I think it's very important that experiences are shared amongst various interest groups that are relevant here. And we see already that there are new groups being formed on the topic of central bank digital currencies, for example, the Bank of Canada, the Bank of England, the Bank of Japan, the European Central Bank, the Swedish Riksbank, and the Swiss National Bank, together with the Bank of International Settlement, have formed a consortium to evaluate and discuss regulatory frameworks and technology potentials. So central banks have high technological expertise. Nevertheless, I think special knowledge is required. It comes to the area of cryptography, for example, or scalable payment solutions. And therefore, it's advisable to develop solutions together to unleash the power of the community. So I see a strong need and big potential in public-private networks.
Well, maybe we need to set up a special network just for cryptography or just for special solutions in different areas. Maybe that's one of the things we should be trying to do, and not just have the general experts in digital currencies, but drill down and go into these specialized categories. That's really good food for thought, I would say. And then the overall issue here, which we mentioned right at the beginning, is that for many reasons, sometimes there are reasons that have come well before the coronavirus crisis. Sometimes they are reasons that have really been surging up because of this period of self-isolation and slowdown or the shutdown of much of the world economy. For whatever reason, it seems as though this element, as you said right at the beginning, that is missing at the moment, the central bank digital currency element, this needs to be plugged. This gap needs to be plugged one way or the other. No doubt it will be. Everybody is increasing their efforts in this regard. There's these working groups that you mentioned being set up. What kind of time frame are we talking about now?
Well, technically, proof of concept can be started, but regulatory frameworks need to be put in place. However, I'm confident that we will see sandboxes within 6 to 10 months and pilots within the next 12 to 18 months. So I think the topic is more important and more timely than ever before, and we are ready to embark on this endeavor.
Well, we'll look forward to seeing how that all develops, and I'm quite sure that we will see an acceleration for different reasons. I'd like to thank you very much, Wolfgang Seidemann, for going through all these points with me. I think we've resolved at least some of the issues. There's many more that we have to look at, of course. For me, three main questions are this. How do we give advice to the central banks who are grappling with all these issues? How do we make them overcome their own learning deficiencies? The second point, which you mentioned, if you like, cloning the benefits of cash to the digital world, particularly with this virtue of safety. Safety, safety, safety. We've got to try to hammer that one home. How can we transfer these benefits at a pretty fraught time for the world economy without causing damage to societies and economies? And then the third thing, which I think is most important of all, is the cross-fertilization angle. How do we get the exchanges of learning, exchanges of knowledge, exchanges of expertise between the central banks and the private sector? Really important. Now, those three questions will guide us going forward. I think this conversation has given us some really valuable pointers about the future. Thank you very much indeed, Wolfgang. I look forward to further really good interactions between the two of us and our two companies and all the other people involved in our network as we continue this journey together.